Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. Thank you very much, Earth Explorers, all over the planet, on planet or off planet. You're welcome here. We're coming to you live from east of the Appalachian Mountains in beautiful North Carolina. Our AccuWeather window forecast, mid-80s, sunny, very beautiful day. A solar wind stream of about 513 kilometers per second is buffeting Earth's magnetic field and causing some geomagnetic activity around the Arctic Circle. High-latitude sky watchers should be alert for auroras. Sunspot 1057 is heading over the limb of the sun right now, causing no more problems. And little sunspot 1059 is small and stable. Thousands of people who gather in Florida will do so on Monday morning, April 5th, to witness the dawn launch of Space Shuttle Discovery. They may get more than they bargained for. 15 minutes before the shuttle takes off, the International Space Station will soar over Cape Canaveral, past the gibbous moon, and almost directly above Discovery. How cool is that? By the way, if you are out and about early in the morning on April 6th, you'll be able to see Discovery and the space shuttle go over together. They're so bright now that you'll be able to see them in broad daylight. There were 29 earthquakes in the last 24 hours, with only two greater than five. One was 6.9 in Baja California. There were four primer quakes to that one. You should also know there hasn't been a quake that size in Baja California in about 20 years. We trust everyone is all right this Easter Sunday down there. My new book, Remembering the Future, came out last Sunday. The printed version will take as long as 3 months, as there is a terrible backlog at the printer. You, however, do not have to wait for them. You can read and enjoy it now. As an added bonus, you get 25% discount on the printed version, so you should get the ebook and read it before you put it on the shelf. Our goal is to sell 1,000 copies before the end of the month, so please tell a friend. There isn't much time, so while the printer catches up, so can you. Just go to rememberingthefuturebook.com, rememberingthefuturebook.com, or click on the book cover at X Squared Radio. Also, Twitter is now alive and well on X Squared Radio. I add stuff all day as we approach the announcement on the Inner Earth Expedition, the launch of the nation's first affordable electric vehicles, and other great things. So follow me on Twitter during the day or in the evening by searching for Brooks Agnew. After a decade of development, the Air Force this month plans to launch a robotic spacecraft resembling a small space shuttle to conduct technology tests in orbit and then glide home to a California runway. The ultimate purpose of the X-37B orbital test vehicle and details about the craft, which has been passed between several government agencies, however, remain a mystery as it is prepared for launch April 19th from Cape Canaveral, Florida. The quietly scheduled launch culminates the project's long and expensive journey from NASA to the Pentagon's research and development arm, and then to a secretive Air Force unit. Hundreds of millions of dollars have been spent on the X-37 program, but the current total has not been released. While the massive space shuttles have been likened to cargo-hauling trucks, the X-37B is more like a sports car, with the equivalent trunk capacity. The mission's length was not released, but the Air Force said the X-37B can stay in orbit for 270 days. The primary landing site will be the northwest of Los Angeles at Coastal Vandenberg Air Force Base. The significance of the X-37B is unclear because the program has been around for so long, said Peter A. Wilson, a senior defense research analyst for the RAND Corporation, who several years ago served as executive director of a congressional panel that evaluated national security space launch requirements. He says, from my perspective, it's a little puzzling as to whether this is the beginning of a program or the end of one. That's what he said Friday in a telephone interview from Washington, D.C. The X-37B is now under the direction of the Air Force's Rapid Capabilities Office. Its mission is to speed up development of combat support systems and weapon systems, just to keep you a little informed what's going on out there. We do have a guest tonight. Michael Ruiz with RV Kronos is coming on at 6 p.m. You won't want to miss that. We'll be back in 40 seconds with the beginning of X Squared Radio. Don't go away. We're glad you're here with us tonight on X Squared Radio. Tonight is Easter Sunday. And it's kind of an interesting place, springtime, this time in the world. You know, we have arrived at a place that not many thought we would reach. In the 1960s, most adults were convinced we were minutes away from nuclear winter. But we somehow did not push the button, at least not more than a few hundred times. Some think we are hundreds of years overdue for cataclysmic destruction by asteroid or comet or gamma storm. They preach that the end is near. The end hasn't come yet. The end is still unfolding before us. But somehow spring comes, and the flowers bloom, and the bees take wing, and fruit follows the blossom once again. The record snows melt, and the lakes swell with life, and the doom and gloom dissolve with the dawn. It wouldn't be right to say all is well with the world, for it is not. Our methods of war have become so accurate and powerful that we do not need mass destruction any longer. But the decision to kill has become depersonalized. It's become dehumanized and patriotic and buried deep in prayers and anthems. I would like to read the words from Leonard Cohen's song Anthem with a little background to it. If you're listening live, just stop what you're doing and absorb these words. If you're listening to this as an archive, Get ready to play this back a few times. A monk, a prophet in song, or perhaps a seer filled with love and dread. Leonard left no word unsaid in this. In fact, adding another syllable would only add noise to the meaning. Leonard Cohen's anthem. The birds, they sang at the break of day. Start again, I heard them say. Don't dwell on what has passed away or what is yet to be. Ah, the wars, they will be fought again. The holy dove, she will be caught again, bought and sold and bought again. The dove is never free. Ring the bells that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. We asked for signs. The signs were sent. The birth betrayed. The marriage spent. Yea, the widowhood of every government. Signs for all to see. I can't run no more with that lawless crowd, while the killers in high places say their prayers out loud. But they've summoned up a thundercloud, and they're going to hear from me. Ring the bells that still can ring. You can add up the parts, but you won't have the sum. You can strike up the march, but there is no drum. Every heart to love will come, but like a refugee. Ring the bells that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There is a crack in everything, and that's how the light gets in. Ring the bells that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. That's how the light gets in. That's how the light gets in. Now let's talk about this day, this Easter day. I rode by churches today. Their pulpits were aflame with a message of sacrifice and love. Children ran through grass this morning with baskets, their new clothes animated with glee and happiness. I still remember my youngest daughter in her new green dress, all fluffy and toothless, holding up a special painted egg in one hand while swinging her basket full of bunnies and birds. Just that one smile between those shiny cheeks was reward enough for coming here to this life. The wonder of new life should be enough to quiet the engines of war. The points of doctrine and various creeds and banners and sashes and robes set aside this day. The curses and judgments and crosses released to the sea to be washed in African rains. The sheaths all occupied and bootlaces all undone. one message today. The greatest of all guidance. Love yourself. Love one another. And through these actions and energies, you are loving God. You become loving God's yourself. Judge not. Peace is not the time between wars, my friends. Like water in the palm of the hand, it cannot be squeezed into submission. It must be cradled and revered. And can we be true? Perhaps not. We can be beings of deception with withholds and edits and plans and designs, but we still love. We can still love. We still can bow to the divinity of one another, for there is God in each of us. And we can hold that one thing sacred, can we not? We can trap ourselves in loops of time and flesh. We can build houses and own gold and wring ourselves into solitude, but we can still love. We can lose our way among the oaths and eternities, continuing like logs in a river, jostling for presence in the present, if there is such a thing. Who you are is not necessarily what you are. Sitting there at your computer, adding value to another's dream, you laid aside your own desire like an angel, and you do the bidding of another by choice, trading your time and skill for food and a place to live, and for education for your children, and for life. Just for this minute, add some of your precious power to the frequency of love. Just add it for a minute to the world. It may reach a resonance that might wash the empty prayers of our leaders and allow the flower of life to unfold its petals to the sun. Once more, maybe, just maybe, we will walk away from the precipice our father races crossed into the night below. I want to thank you very much for being part of X Squared Radio for the past 5 years. I don't have a lot to say about the growth and metamorphosis of our world. I don't know how I participate. I sit here behind this microphone each Sunday evening and speak to you. My phone line remains open. My heart remains open. 415-762-1161. 415-762-1161. At 6 p.m. Pacific, our guest, Michael Ruiz, will come on, and he'll be part of the program tonight. I also want to thank you very much for buying the e-book, Remembering the Future, over the last week. You will receive 25% off the printed version if you purchase the e-book. And that's valuable, you know, just giving that away, allowing you to read the book 3 months before it comes out in print. Not many authors will do that. The good part is not only do you get to read the book, but you get all the pictures in it in color, which you don't get with the printed version because we don't print books with color pictures anymore, but you can read it in color. I'm also going to be presenting at the eSETI conference this summer, this July. So go to eSETI, that's ECETI.org, to sign up to be there. It's not expensive, and you will get to see a UFO. Oh, yeah, I added that. That's right. You do get to see a UFO. So bring your camera, because your friends will not believe you if you don't. Also, if you go to xsquaredradio.com, you'll notice in the right-hand column, we have some features for you. There's a running Twitter there that you can join into, and there's also a link to Questers. Questers is a conference in Calgary, Canada. This is a group of explorers who have an annual conference. They've invited me to speak up there this year, May 14th, and I want you to be there. It's also not expensive. So I want you to make your way up there and support that conference. If you're in the local area, you really don't have an excuse. You have till May, so let's put it together. Neither one of these are ordinary conferences, okay? You won't return home with a workshop high. You will return home a different person. Trust me. There's not much time to work on the earth, and we need every awakened soul we can find. So go there and make a point of it. If you want to be part of the program tonight, our phone number is 415-762-1161. I know a lot of you are still in your backyards enjoying cookouts with your family, and I appreciate that. Hopefully you have your computer up and running on the picnic table and the speakers hooked to it, and you're listening to the program tonight. There are some strange things happening in the world right now, high strangeness, to be sure, as world powers jockey for position and try to decide if the whole world is broke or not. We're going to see some interesting repositioning. The IMF, the investment community, the oil companies. I noticed in the news this week that President Obama, once very pro-alternative energy and very negative on special interest groups and high, powerful companies like the oil companies, has announced that we are going to step up the pace in drilling for domestic oil. So look for those rigs to be rolling out in your farmlands and punching holes, and look for all those plugged wells, capped wells all across the country to have valves installed and fresh tanks put in front of them, because we're going to turn on the spigots, boys. It's time to get the price of oil down. Heck, we might end up with electric cars if the price of oil gets too high, and we can't have that now, can we? So a lot of very interesting posturing going on. Also, I've read a couple of interesting publications lately. I don't want to share the names of them with you because some of the authors of these publications are no longer enjoying freedom, if you know what I mean. But I want to tell you that there's a feeling of anarchy out there. There's a feeling that the status quo, the establishment government, the business as usual, we are going to run things our way, and if you, the taxpayer, think you're in charge of things, you have another thing coming attitude, is alive and well in Washington. But the interesting thing about Washington is it's its own little world, and there's a whole nother world out here that's real. And we have possessions, and we have families, and we have dreams, and it has nothing to do with the talking faces. Forget about talking heads in Washington. They're just talking faces now. All the words aren't original anymore. They're all part of the same orchestrated message. And if you have a different message, guess what you don't get? Airtime. Well, I think this year what we're going to do is we're going to make room here on X Squared Radio for that other airtime. So if you're a politician or you're thinking about running for office out there and you can't get airtime, here at X Squared Radio, we don't practice fair and balanced. We don't practice both sides get to say their piece. You call me, you make arrangements, and I'll give you a couple minutes to say your piece. We let the people decide, not the press decide, whose message gets listened to and who gets voted for. We're going to take a little bit more involvement in the political process here, because politics at the end of the day is a beautiful process. It's politicians that have soiled it. So it's not that we're going to become a political program, we are going to become a voice for the people. And as we expand out into the regular airwaves, and we get out there where people driving their cars around can hear what we're having to say, perhaps we won't have a grassroots effect. We'll have a grass fire effect. John from Vancouver, welcome to the program.
Hi, Brooks.
How are you this evening, my friend?
Well, pretty good. I'm winging it. I just thought, well, I'll just call in and I'll just talk from, you know, right off the top of my head.
Well, that's what I've been doing since the show started, except for a minute.
Okay. Well, all right. Okay, here's what I noticed this evening. Like, you were, you've got this soothing thing happening, sort of, where you were reciting a bit of Leonard Cohen, who's, I wouldn't exactly say soothing. He's more insightful and edgy and that kind of thing. But I'm also getting, how do I put this? Like, I get really frustrated, and I'm kind of thinking that you're putting this thing together as a way to kind of deal with the things that are so frustrating in the world, the limitations and the kind of really bad stuff that keeps going on and on and on. And so there's this, you know, this feeling of, well, how the heck can we actually change this so that we're actually seeing some significant change?
Well, I can tell you the way change has traditionally happened, and I don't want to see it go this way. Change of the type that we're talking about global change. We're talking about the proliferation of an integration of the human race so that we become a planet of people rather than a group of nations of people. That kind of change takes revolution. And I don't want to talk about it in terms of historical revolution. We have a much mightier and much more effective weapon, if I want to call it that, and that is the pen. That is the voice. That we can reach instantaneously all around the globe now. We don't need fast jets. We don't need missile defense systems. We don't need marching armies or blitzkriegs or anything like that. We have us. We can reach one another all the way around the planet instantaneously. There could be 100 million people listening to this program tonight, and nothing could stop them. That's the kind of revolution I'm talking about.
Boy, what can I say about that?
You know, it's an organized, orchestrated, planned, scripted, and pre-planned method of communication that we face with the mass media. What you get on, you know, syndicated radio or in print or on television or cable channels is all scripted. It's all teleprompted. With rare exception, there's nothing that deviates from the course of empire building. We're not talking about capitalism. Capitalism is wonderful. You know who could bail out this country, this world? Small business, if it was allowed to do so.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm a small businessman myself.
You know, President Obama was here in North Carolina on Thursday, and he was at a company called CellGuard, and he made the most audacious statement. He said, no businessman is going to invest in the public good. Is he crazy?
Really?
That's all we do is for the public good.
where is he coming from when he asked that, when he made that statement?
Well, his he tried to backpedal for a moment. He said, look, Celgard isn't going to build the roads to get here. They're not going to build the infrastructure, put the sewer in, and blah, blah, blah. But that's not what he meant at all. What he meant was Celgard couldn't be without our help, without government stepping in and being the partner. These small businesses can't exist. And that's just flat false.
Where do you think his agenda is coming from?
Well, I've been,
I find it alien. Really, I find his stuff alien, especially to what I know to be the American spirit.
Well,
like
in the second book of the Ark of Millions of Years, we wrote about a very orchestrated and an ancient designed system of alchemy that was originally put together by the Watchers. Supposedly it was wiped out with the flood of Noah, but in Numbers chapter 13 they're back and nothing has been able to remove them from the earth since then. Now we can say, oh, humans are the only sentient beings on the earth, but you don't believe that and I don't believe that.
No, I don't believe it.
I see much like when it rains in the water universe, when it rains on the surface, you can see the ripple between dimensions. You see the fingerprints of very ancient economic designs here, trying to take control of a planet, not with war, not with ideologies, but economically. And the words that he used in his speech down here in North Carolina, he didn't talk about free enterprise. He didn't talk about the American spirit, as you just did. He talked about workers. That comes from Marx. That doesn't come from the human spirit.
Yeah. It reminds me, I was just thinking about the four categories of collectivity. Hive mind, herd mind, flocks, and I forget the fourth one. So I think it'd be interesting to kind of distinguish between those four collectivities: hive, flock, herd. I just can't remember the third one.
I think the last one would be school. School mentality, you know, where we try to look like
school.
Everyone else.
That's like I was thinking school of fish. That's
yeah.
The fourth one. That's right. So the thing is to know which collectivity you're in, you would need to distinguish between school, hive, herd,
and flock.
Flock. Yeah.
Well, the main difference is that I
think going on
is that the hive mentality, there is no individual. Everybody works for the good of the hive, and you work yourself to death, and then you're reborn as another and another and another, and maybe one day you get to be the queen. Oh, and then you're really free. You never get to fly. You have to sit around and have another hive.
Yeah.
But the school mentality, we're not there yet. The school mentality is that you've got to move together, and only the weak will show up. And they'll be the ones victimized. That's not where
in a school.
Yeah, yeah.
I've never thought of it that way. That's kind of amusing.
The predators don't
okay.
don't rush into the school, you know, scooping up dozens and dozens. No. They look for the stragglers. They look for the individuals. They look for the ones that go outside of the school or outside of the herd, saying, "I'm independent. I'm going to run a different way." Yeah, you're a meal.
Uh-huh.
And the government, and I don't even like to use the word government, at least in this country, because I don't think we have one. I think we have a loose coalition of bureaucracies that has maybe a couple of bodies out there scooping and confiscating the hard-earned money of every man, woman, and child that will be born for the next 50 years now, and basically feeding themselves, giving themselves raises every 90 days, and forget about the raises. Let's talk about the retirement plan. Let's talk about the health plan. Let's talk about all the perks and benefits that they don't have to pay for, that we do have to pay for. Sure, a congressman makes $146,000 a year, plus or minus a little bit, but he gets another $140,000 a year in perks and things that make it that much easier. And if he can survive a couple of terms, my goodness, the retirement is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And if you think that we can afford that, look what happened to General Motors.
What do we do? Not vote? Or, what do we do?
Well, we don't get to vote on stuff like that. That's internal workings. Those are things, those are laws that are passed by the lawmakers. I think C-SPAN is one of the most marvelous sunshine acts that ever took place. We get to watch what's going on the floor of the House and the floor of the Senate. However, they have made it so boring and so mundane, no one is watching. Nobody cares.
Yeah, I don't watch.
I watched back in 1991, 92, when Clinton was running for office, late night. Guys like Dornan and others were just reading volumes and volumes of stuff that went on while Clinton was governor of Arkansas. And I thought to myself, oh my goodness, there's no possible way that guy could ever win as president. He won twice. Blew my mind, totally blew my mind. That's when I realized nothing that goes on the floor of Congress has any effect on what the real design is.
Oh boy.
And we had Andrew Basciago on the program a couple of times, and I had a chance to speak to him last summer for about 7 hours outside.
Oh yeah.
And in his time travel program that he was involved with as a young boy, his father was involved with, which involved him as well. They already knew that Obama was going to be president. He had met him years and years and years ago.
Right. I sort of remember that. What Andy talks about is so outrageous, yet at the same time he's out there as a functioning lawyer, and when you listen to him, you know, he's very present, he's very logical and confident, that kind of thing. So when he presents that information, it's very difficult, very challenging to assimilate what he's talking about.
Well, you match it up with the facts. NASA announces, what is it, about 3 years ago, yes, we're going back to the moon, we'll be there in 2020. Obama becomes president, and it's the end of manned spaceflight. We're done.
Right.
We're not sending men to space anymore with our rockets. We'll catch a ride with someone else. But we have another way.
That's just not the America that I grew up with. That's for sure.
Well, I'm afraid that
America
it is.
America was pioneering out there, you know.
In those days, it was very easy to control the media. We only had four TV channels, and that's if you lived in the Los Angeles area. You had some local broadcasters, but as far as national news, it was news at 6 and 11. Not till 1991 did we have 24-hour-a-day news, and that's because the best entertainment in town was the Gulf War. That's when CNN came to be. That's when 24-hour news became fashionable. And I sat when I was maintenance manager at Nissan, we would sit at lunchtime and watch the war on TV. You couldn't take your eyes off of it.
That's very difficult to kind of digest. Because, you know, if we're watching war for entertainment purposes, what does that say?
Yeah. What does that say?
Exactly. Yeah, what does that say? And you know, there's lots of people, like there's families who have lost their sons and daughters in battle, and those families, for the most part, want to continue on and make their sons and daughters' lives meaningful, so they want to continue the war. And it would be very difficult to challenge that point of view since they've suffered that loss. But that's how this thing gets continued. And I get so annoyed because, like, what I want to say is I support the troops, but not the morons that put them there. You know, there's a big difference.
Well, there's another difference. You know, we say we support the troops, but 90% of those that are wearing boots right now, they didn't join an army. They joined a National Guard. They joined to bail people out of floods. They joined to pick people up after a tornado. They joined for a couple extra $100 a month and maybe a shot at a college education. They didn't join the National Guard to go to war.
Yeah, I wouldn't imagine so.
They're not troops. They're neighbors.
Right. Well, we're still stuck with this, Brooks, so what do we do?
Well, fortunately for the world, there's only 435 of them. We're doing a census right now to find out who is where, who's moved around, where is the central point of population. By the way, it's been moving continuously west about 200 miles every 10 years. It used to be right here in eastern Kentucky, and it has moved west a couple hundred miles every 10 years for the last 40 years. You can watch it go across the country. Further and further west, people are being pushed into the flatlands, away from the congestion and high cost of the cities. But this census is really important. According to our Constitution, every single American has the right to be counted. Now, for about 20 years, Congress and some Senate has been pushing for a statistical census. That is to say, they take a sampling and then they extrapolate from there and come up with the way the nation has stratified itself. Thus, we can assign how many congressmen each state gets, where the Democratic and Republican borders are going to be for different districts so that they can balance things out. This is going to be a very, very interesting rearrangement, because in the last 10 years, the largest minority in our country changed. It changed from African American to Hispanic.
Oh, yeah.
And that's going to make a big, big change in the way things happen in our country. For one thing, you're going to see a big push for amnesty for people that have managed to make their way into our country and saddle up beside a lawnmower or a paintbrush for a few years and serve the public good, because obviously that's not a job any ordinary American would do. I mean, I don't see any white people out there picking peppers, do you? I don't see anybody picking cucumbers or tomatoes. God, we don't have machines to do that, John. It's got to be done by hand. And these are people that are willing to work. And they go out with pride, and they have families, and they go to church, and they obey the law. And they make great Americans. They're wonderful people. I've worked with them and worked for them and had them work for me. I love them. They show up to work every single day, even if they got paid the day before. Sober. Now, that's saying something. That's really saying something. And I had a friend of mine, Willie, said, I'll go ahead and say this on this program. He said, I don't understand, Brooks. He's an African-American. He said, I don't understand. How did we lose this? We've been here for 300 years. How did we become the second largest minority in the country? I said, Willie, come on. Use your head for a minute. You know, we've been aborting 1.6 million babies a year for 30 years in this country. And 70% of them have been black. Come on. You're killing your own generation. And Hispanics don't have abortions. It doesn't take long for the numbers to work out.
Mm-hmm. Well, also, It sounds like if they're willing to do that kind of work, and I'll let you know myself, like if I need work, I'll go pick apples, you know, like I'm not.
Sure.
If I need the work, I'll do it. But what you sort of described was because of their spirituality and their family relations, they kind of work it out and they'll do what's necessary to hold the family together.
Well, that's because it pays good money too. It pays good money. You know, I talk to teenagers today, and they say, I can't find a job. I say, really? Have you been out there and looked for a job? Oh, yeah, I went down to McDonald's. I went to Taco Bell. I went to Walmart. You're not going to get those jobs. Those are air-conditioned jobs. Those are the jobs that are held by seniors in this country. If you're going to work, and you're a young person and you have no skill, you're going to work outside. You're going to wash cars. You're going to paint houses. You're going to mow grass. You're going to do the stuff that's hard work, and you're going to learn what a dollar is worth.
My dad ran his own business. He ran a turf farm.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. And so one of my jobs was you would get wild grass coming into the cultivated grass, and my dad would call it twitch grass.
Mm-hmm.
So my job in the summer was to take a screwdriver and hand pick out the twitch grass, you know, all day long.
You bet.
That's one of the jobs that my dad gave me during the summer.
Hey, you can't help it. I mean, birds eat seed. They fly over. They don't often land to do what they do in the air, and the seed, along with a little bit of manure from the bird, lands in the grass and grows.
So that's how it works.
That's how nature does it. And in the desert,
really,
with thorns and stickers, they stick to animals, and the animal eventually gets mad about it and flicks it off, and it hits the ground and grows another jumping choya.
Well, it created a job for me when I was a kid.
There you go.
Getting rid of that stuff.
That's what I'm talking about. You know, it's value added. It's what can you do to make ends meet? And you got to start somewhere. And my goodness, the minimum wage
and
is...
And I believe that starting at the bottom is the best place.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I can tell you, as starting up a new electric car company in Eastern Kentucky, we get hundreds of people that come in and apply for jobs. And we say, well, what do you want to do? Management. Yeah, I want to do management.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we can't find any line workers. Everybody wants to be a manager. I'm kidding. They come in and... It breaks my heart, you know, when they come in and say, look, I'll do anything. I'll sweep floors, I'll clean toilets, I'll paint. I'll work for free for a couple of weeks just to show you what I can do. I need a job.
Yeah.
You know, in Eastern Kentucky...
Well, that's what I would appreciate, that kind of spirit myself.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the state's full of people like that. You know, while the nation is enjoying pretty close to 10% unemployment, Eastern Kentucky is at about 18.5% unemployment. And a lot of people are self-employed. And the self-employed are living well below the poverty level.
Well, so, I'm one of those.
Yeah, exactly.
How difficult would it be for a state to start its own currency and get an economy going?
Well, it would have to be a different kind of currency than printed currency. That happens to be against the Constitution. But you can create some kind of credit. You can create some kind of barter chit that can be used.
Like a script, you mean?
Lots of businesses have done that. They just put a credit in their system that allows it to be traded. I think communities are going to have to start getting creative, because there just isn't any money. You know, if you want to start a business and you need a couple of $1 million in the United States of America, you're going to have to go to Europe for the money. You're going to have to go to China for the money, because American banks are broke. And we've been telling people for the last couple of years, very quietly, go to the bank and get your cash out.
Yeah.
Save it at your house. It's a lot safer.
Have you heard of John Waterman?
The name sounds familiar. Refresh my memory.
He runs a radio show out of Holland called Argusoog Radio.
Hmm.
And he really talks about creating local script. And there's lots of examples in the States that have done that.
Interesting.
And, you know, like the biggest challenge is, you know, what can that script buy? And so if you're developing a local script, the biggest challenge is, you know, to pay the rent, you know, to get it to expand. I figure since the Federal Reserve is broke, then that's all the more chance for local communities to really make a, you know, a solid medium of exchange without all the games that the Federal Reserve has been playing with. I mean, as far as I can tell, they've lost it. They you know, they did derivatives to the point where it's not ever going to be paid off. It's not possible.
Well, it would be one thing if the banks would have invested in their own communities. But if you go down to the bank and you say, I want to start a small business, the first question out of their mouth is, how much real estate do you own?
Right.
You let me have a mortgage-backed security that I can trade somewhere outside this state, because after all, we're a multi-state bank.
Yeah.
The banks.
I've run into that myself. I know exactly what that's like.
They don't serve their local communities anymore. Banks are out of the business.
Well, you know, there's a vacuum. Nature abhors a vacuum.
It sure does. It sure does.
Yeah.
I can tell if private investors, if they wanted to move into these small communities, there's a gold mine there, because they're pretty much self-supporting, you know. Like we say, buy Kentucky first and buy American second, because it's a Kentuckian that's going to buy the stuff you're building and use it. So buy Kentucky first and provide jobs for your own state. Actually, Kentucky's a commonwealth.
Well, you know, maybe that's something you might want to promote on your show.
I want to start a secession. That's what I want to do.
No, I'm not thinking political. I'm just
all right, John. Listen, you know, we're at the top of the hour. I got to get ready for Michael Ruiz to come on. So I really appreciate the phone call. And
thanks so much.
Keep the faith, and we'll see you next Sunday. Okay.
All right. Bye for now.
All right. So we'll take a quick break, play some appropriate music, and we'll be right back after this. Don't go away. Well, there you have it, X Squared Radio listeners all around the world. Will we be victorious? That's the question. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to hang around and watch. Because it's going to be fun. We're glad you're here with us tonight on Hour 2 of X Squared Radio. We're coming to you live from the east of the Appalachian Mountains, and our AccuWindow forecast is high 70s, and the stars are out tonight. By the way, Mars is overhead. And don't forget, at about 6:29 on the eastern seaboard, April 6th, you'll be able to see the space shuttle come over really bright, because it's going to have the space station attached to it. Should be a -3.3, which is about bright enough to read a newspaper by. Hey, listen, don't go away. We'll be back in 40 seconds with Michael Ruiz, Kronos RV. Don't go away. 40 seconds. And remember, if you want to be part of tonight's program, the phone number is 415-762-1161, 415-762-1161. Thank you very much for purchasing Remembering the Future. The ebook is out. It'll be out going strong. We need about 1,000 copies of that sold. So see what you can do about that. Spread the word. We want you to read the book. It's coming out in print in 90 days, but you get 25% off the printed version if you buy the ebook. So do that, and we will help each other. You'll help keep the lights on and get a good read. Michael Ruiz, you know, I got to tell you, have you ever been completely surprised when something happens? Have you ever not been completely surprised when something happened? Have you ever been standing there with your glove on and open when the ball just fell into it without even having to move it? Perhaps you were trapped into the fabric of time and its quantum possibilities. Perhaps you would like to know how to do that even more. When you don't want to miss a single second of our guest tonight on X Squared Radio, please welcome with me remote viewing expert Michael Ruiz. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me, Brooks.
I know he's
there.
Can
you hear me? Oh.
Because my producer says he's there. And he's going to come on in just a second. Or I hope he's not remotely viewing X Squared Radio right now. Because I'm not wearing any socks. remote viewing, if you'll remember, we had Brent Miller on the program last year.
Can you hear me
and
now?
Also the year before. And he talked to us about remote viewing. And remote viewing is a learned skill. And there's a set of tapes out there, DVDs, to help you learn that skill. Michael Ruiz has taken it to the next level, because one of the weaknesses of traditional remote viewing, you can see a place. You can even see it in the past or in the future, but you can't predict the time. So that's what Kronos RV has been able to master. So we're trying to get Michael's audio working. I can't hear him. My producer promises me he's there, but I can't hear him. Okay. Oh, he's going to reconnect
me.
Okay. So we'll go dark for about 15 seconds, and we'll be back with X Squared Radio. I'll just let you archive listeners listen to some music, and we'll be right back. Don't go away.
Can you hear me? Can anybody hear you? .com.
If it's not mainstream, it could.
Okay, let's try that. We're reconnected.
Can you hear me? Yeah.
I can hear you now. Perfectly. All right, Michael Ruiz is with us. That's what we love about internet radio. We just roll with it because it's a totally different media here. And you're crystal clear.
Excellent.
All right, so you heard what I said, and I couldn't hear what you said, so...
I just said thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Michael, is remote viewing a trained skill, or does it take talent to be able to see a distant place in time?
Well, it's like any skill. Everybody has the ability to learn how to play basketball or to play piano or any musical instrument or to learn things. And with remote viewing, it's just a skill that can be taught. So anybody can do it, barring some really terrible physical defect, such as a brain damage or something like that.
Okay, so I watched your DVD. You've got a DVD called Chronos RV, and I guess this is available to everyone if they just go to, what is it, rvchronos.com?
Yep, you can go to rvchronos.com. That's rvchronos.com. And you can also get it by going directly to our marketing and distributing company, remoteviewingproducts.com.
All right. You know, I've seen and I've used remote viewing to see places, but not necessarily to change anything. For instance, I had a friend who asked me to describe what they were holding on the other side of the world, and in a few seconds I got the image, so I told this person what they were holding as a yellow wing, like a bird wing, and this person was holding a golden bird.
Interesting.
So it does work, and I've been in workshops where they put something inside of a box, and you have to use remote viewing to say what's inside the box. I actually got it wrong because what I saw was round and dimpled, so I said, oh, it's a golf ball. And it wasn't. It was a wireframe round ball with dimples all over it. So I guessed, and I didn't actually say what I saw. I assumed, and so I got it wrong.
Yeah, that's one of the deadly dangers in remote viewing. What your mind does is when it's perceiving these information patterns in what we call the matrix, it's putting together percepts. So you'll see something, like you said, dimpled and spherical, round, and your mind, your subconscious mind, starts thinking about this and making mental associations, because during the whole process of remote viewing, a person's unconscious awareness is constantly in communication with a certain layer of their brain that contains information. It starts making associations of round and sphere and shiny and whatnot. And you'll begin to say, oh, it is a golf ball, but in essence, it was something completely different. And that's called analytical overlay. So that's one of the deadly dangers in remote viewing, because you can just completely be off target when you allow your thinking mind to rationalize what the perceptual data is that you're receiving.
And I can see that's where the training comes in, because I was one of those kids that blurted out the answer in school, and I didn't show my work, and I just went right to the answer. So I'm a natural for goofing it up. let's talk about the fundamentals of remote viewing, because, I mean, a lot of people think, oh, he's clairvoyant or he has some kind of psychic power. It doesn't have anything to do with that, does it?
No, it's really an inherent human capability. When we researched the origin of remote viewing and where it comes from, we found in our data. Now, this is just, it's not something that you're going to find in some science book somewhere. But what we've discovered was that it is something that is a holdover from when we were very primitive creatures, tree-apsing around the forest or badlands of Pangea. And we needed to have a perceptual mechanism that would allow us to survive, that would allow us to perceive things that were outside of our immediate conscious awareness, and would also allow us to react to that information that we were perceiving that was outside of that conscious awareness. And that's really what remote viewing is. It's a holdover from early on in our evolutionary process. And now people call it gut instinct, or, you blurt out an answer and it happens to be correct or maybe incorrect. But in essence, it's something, it's a holdover from when we were very primitive creatures.
Well, I imagine as we got better at communication and better at sending out scouts and getting messages back, we could find out where the herd was or when the ice was melting or those kinds of things. And we got good at reading the stars, so we knew when spring was going to come, and we knew when to move south and when to come down out of the mountain. But, we kind of outsmarted ourselves, don't you think? We forgot how to do all this primitive stuff.
Well, yeah. I mean, who needs remote viewing when you have your cell phone with a GPS and a map and a camera? I mean, who needs it, right? But you actually do, because there are things that...
I got the cell phone that only, and the GPS unit that only tell locations in this time, in this dimension. And remote viewing can go in the past, into the future, into various futures. I got the book that I just wrote is called Remembering the Future. And so we don't do a lot of remote viewing in it, but we do very clearly from a physics standpoint show that the observation effect on the future affects the future timeline. The future is kind of like always in motion. And in the book, with permission, use a Dilbert comic where Dilbert says, in the future, I choose the soup, so I'm going to choose the salad. Does that mean that I'm wrong? It doesn't.
No.
You have knowledge about the future, and so now you can make an informed decision which chooses a new future.
Yes. In essence, you can. But what we've found is there's what I call magnitude and proximity. And the greater the magnitude of the thing you're trying to change, the more difficult it is to change. And then proximity deals with both your involvement within that future thing that you wish to change and your actual physical proximity to the event itself. So if we can change, we know this, we can change things that are have a close proximity with, and things that have a very low magnitude, meaning things that are within our immediate capabilities there. Like I can pick up the pen that's on my desk, or I can choose not to pick it up, or I can have the salad instead of the soup if I know that that's what I'm going to have in the future. But for changing big events, something that, well, like the coming cataclysm, for instance, no amount of meditation or positive thinking of any sort is going to change that, because it's a galactic event. It's not something that we can change. We can't change our planet's orbit around the sun. There's just things that are just so huge that anything that we attempt is insignificant.
Sometimes people ask me, look, I arrive at a place that I've never physically been before, and yet I know where everything is, and I feel like I've been here before. Is this remote viewing? Have they seen this place before?
Well, and it's interesting you should say that, because what we found during the research and development of Kronos is we discovered that the unconscious awareness of an individual is spread out over the entire world line. If you can imagine, as an analogy, a toast with butter spread across its surface. In that analogy, the toast itself represents the world line that we're transiting on, and the unconscious awareness is represented by the butter. It's sort of spread out into the future and the past, all across it. But our conscious awareness, the thing that you and I are using to speak and that people are listening to us with. That awareness condenses, it sort of coalesces into one single point along this world line. And we got this information from the Matrix. This is what remote viewing is so useful for, is because you can ask it questions and get an answer, and all you have to do is analyze the data. It's kind of like the universal Google. You ask it a question, you get an answer. So that's what's causing the deja vu, what we call deja vu. His unconscious awareness is already in the future, just as his unconscious awareness is already in the past. And his physical mind, his temporal self, is merely catching up to where his unconscious awareness has already been. And the DVD I use is... go ahead.
I said that's very interesting. I like that concept. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I use in the... I allude to that in the DVD by using a metaphor of a jet aircraft traveling faster than the speed of sound. If you imagine that happening and it's flying overhead, you look up, your eyes instantly, due to instinct and because that's where the sound is, your eyes go to where the sound is in space, not where the plane is. So we as beings are very much like this. We're transiting through space-time, but our physical self has already gone through the entire life cycle that we will have from a soul level, if you want to call it that. And our conscious awareness is just kind of sort of following the path that our physical selves have already transited. So in that sense, it's almost like there's no free will. But in a sense, it is. It goes back to that Dilbert thing. If you know that something's going to happen and you choose differently, does that mean that you've changed time, or has that really just been predestination, predetermined? You were predetermined to see yourself in the future doing something different, and you changed it. So you've gone through a whole self-deterministic process in doing that. So
I'm always amused by people who you know, they've been doomsayers for 5 or 10 years. They've said, oh, you know, this is going to happen, and the world's going to hell in a handbasket, and the economy's going to collapse, and blah, blah, blah. And then it does. And then they say, you see, I told you all this. I saw all this. I knew it was going to happen. And I always ask the question, are you sure you didn't make it happen with the energy that you put behind what it was you saw in the future? Are you sure that your consciousness didn't collapse what would have been a perfectly harmless energy passing through our space into matter and made it reality?
That is the question, and it's a good one, and it's one that is going to be the focus of a future project. But I just haven't had enough time, and neither is anybody on my team. I've kept them so busy. We've got projects lined up, but we don't have enough viewers to do all the work that we have to do. It's amazing.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, we spoke with Brent and a couple of his team members a couple of years back, because one of the things we want to make part of the North Pole expedition is a team of remote viewers, 5 on the ship and 5 on land in various places around the world, or all together if that's where they happen to live. But we don't really know exactly where this opening might be. No one does. And if they do, they're not telling, because I'm sure we could sue through the Freedom of Information Act, and they would tell us. No, probably not. We're going to have some really a great talent to be able to discover if there is this elusive opening through the crust into what might be an inside Earth. And I got to tell you, you know, as a science team, we don't throw data out and we don't throw scientific methods out. And I could tell you, I've been through Brent Miller's set of DVDs and now yours. It is a very scientific technique.
It is. It's totally based on empirical knowledge that we have today, as far as its derivative, you know, the antecedents were things like philosophy and psychology and neurophysiology and biology, and it's completely based on that. It's a derivative. Everything is an antecedent in remote viewing. Remote viewing is an antecedent to those scientific principles and theories.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some real world cases. When you're asked to find, say, a missing person, or to find a treasure for someone, like weapons of mass destruction or something, is there a fixed process for doing this? And tell me some cases that you've had or that you know about.
Well, some of the things I can't say, but, well, for instance, with Ed Dames, we've worked with him on several treasure targets, and the funny thing is we don't ever actually find, you know, the what we want. We want to find gold bars or gold coins, but what the Matrix give us is unrefined gold. It sends us to a place out in the middle of nowhere, and the gold is in the dirt. The gold is embedded in the rocks, and you have to break it and mineralize. You have to demineralize. You have to extract it out of the physical earth. It's almost like the Matrix has an intelligence or maybe a sense of humor. Says, "Oh, you want treasure? Okay, here's some treasure for you, but you're gonna have to work for it." It's like it doesn't want to give it to you for free. So, I mean, we've done that a couple of times, and when we another good example is when we were looking for a place to have our workshop. I waited until the last minute to find a place to have a workshop for remote viewing, and I figured how difficult could it be to get a place to have a workshop. You know, about 20 people there, not a big group, don't need a huge room. Well, as it turns out, every place that I wanted was either booked or was way too expensive at that last minute kind of thing. So I finally said, what's wrong with me? I'll just remote view it. So me and the team remote viewed it, found the place, drove to it. It took us about 30 minutes to actually find the building, went in, talked to the people, and we had the workshop there the next
week.
It's amazing.
Well, I know when people are working with, say, the law of attraction, they might say something like, I would like to have a motorcycle. Really? Okay, I asked the question, what kind of motorcycle? Oh, it doesn't matter. Really? What color? I don't care. Well, then you're probably never going to get the motorcycle. You have to really get it down to the detail. I want a 1996 purple, less than 10,000 miles, and I don't want to spend any more than $4,000 for it. You're getting specific. Now you can really view something and put your energy on it and make it happen.
That's absolutely correct. It's a universal principle, it would seem, that, you know, it's like going to a database. If anybody's a programmer out there in your audience, you know that you can have a general query against a database and say select all from whatever table. But you have to tell the universe what you want, just like you have to tell the database what you want. And then you get that back. So it's very specific. If you ask a general question, you're going to get a general, non-specific answer. If you ask a very specific question, you will get a very specific set of data back.
I gotcha. So now I understand, you know, finding a place, because you can come up with the lines of the building or a nearby sign that looks like a donut or a, you know, whatever. But how do you find a place and time? How do you know when to be where?
That is what took a lot. That was my big brain pain, as a matter of fact, is how do we determine where we are in time, or so that we can figure out where anything else is in time? Because I was under the mistaken idea that we had to know where we are in space-time in order to derive anything else, because you need to have a reference point, just like in geolocation, when you're doing triangulation. You have reference points. You have things that you know where these places are, and you can triangulate and do all kinds of neat things and find things. Well, you needed that for pinning down when something would occur in time. You needed to have reference points. And then I was reading some books, and it occurred to me that time is actually a metaphor for us as humans. You know, we can say, oh, it's, you know, April 4th, but that's not really when it is. It's an unknown to us. We created the concept of months and the concept of numbers that we assign to the days of the month and to the years themselves. You know, this is 2010. So 2010 when, though? Because there's also a Judaic calendar, that the Masons have their own calendar, the Chinese have their own calendar. Everybody has their own calendar. The Matrix has its own idea about what time is. And so we look to the Matrix to tell us how to pin things down in time. We actually queried the Matrix and said, how does the Matrix perceive time? You know, and we found out how it perceives time. It perceives it interesting. It's like a condensed ball of or a hypersphere is what it looks. It is what it sees time as. It sees everything happening at once. In other words, yesterday is happening right now. 10 years ago,
like a singularity.
Right, yes, everything is occurring at one time, as far as the Matrix is concerned. So that was great, but that doesn't really help in downtime.
Well, its perception is at the speed of light, which time slows down to nothing. To, you know, 1 second is the whole universe.
Yeah,
we are able to stretch it out into moments, and maybe the Matrix doesn't understand moments at all. But we still
actually, you know, it does.
We need to know when the tsunami is coming.
Yeah, it does actually. It understands our concept of time. So the first step was understanding its concept of time, because then we can derive a metaphor that we can use and that the Matrix can interpret correctly for us. So we created a metaphor of time, and that's what we call tangential reference material in our Chronos system. And you can think of this as a map, in the same way that you can go to Google Earth. And you can, you know, change the map view, and you can see things on a map style USGS kind of survey map. Well, it's the same thing. We create a map of time, and we place reference points on this map that the Matrix understands and that we understand. And then we can tell the Matrix by using traditional technical remote viewing or controlled or coordinate remote viewing, we can tell the Matrix where on this metaphor of time is this event that we've just remote viewed going to occur. And then we can do some hybrid ARV, and we can actually zoom in to this metaphor of time that we create and pin down exactly when something is going to occur.
Okay, now without getting into all the detail, because we want people to go ahead and get the DVD and get trained on this, go to rvchronos.com and do that. But this metaphor of time, in English, we talk about metaphors as using verbs that would normally describe something else as something you want to say for artistic reasons. So what you're really doing here is you're creating an analog. You're bracketing in a section of what we call time, and then you're asking the question, where inside this bracket that we just made is this going to occur?
Yes, that's pretty much exactly it. It's called a conceptual metaphor. It's used by cognitive linguists and philosophers, and even mathematics when they're transferring one mathematical concept into another domain. So there's actually a target domain and a source domain. Mathematicians do that all the time when they're working with strange numbers and things like that.
So, right. We use metric tensors, or we use functions, to create a metaphor, a mathematical metaphor, so, because we don't like answers like infinity. It really bothers
us. Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of the same thing with Chronos. We create a conceptual metaphor that maps the human concept of time to the Matrix's concept of time.
Well, okay, now I understand why we include time, because in the third dimension, although we really are in four dimensions, because we also need to know when to be at work and when to meet the love of our life, not just that we're going to meet them. And it also keeps us from wasting effort. Like we build the ark and we're ready, but the flood doesn't happen for 100 years. So we've sort of prepared for the wrong thing, and wasted the gross national product for something that isn't going to happen in a couple of lifetimes. And I think this is really a breakthrough, because in working with the traditional, I say traditional remote viewing, like it's something that's so widespread. I mean, working with regular remote viewing, what I was able to do is tell shapes and maybe a sign location, which hotel to go to at a convention that's going to have a room available, because I don't have a reservation, that kind of stuff. I've used it, and it does work. I do get images, and I do not make prejudgments as to what they are, and I'm able to kind of position myself and move myself and be, as it were, in the right place, but the right time has been the challenge.
Yeah, now it's pretty much easy. You just have to work through the iterations, because it is an iterative process. And you know, it looks daunting at first, because in this DVD, because it's such a new concept, I had to go into a lot of background. You know, I had to describe how it came about, what we used to bring it into existence in our research and development efforts. And then after that, it's just really going step by step. I tried to make it as simple as possible, and it really is. There's just a few steps. You do a target, you create some reference material, you remote view it, and you rinse and repeat that process until you get an answer.
Right.
So it's simple.
A lot of it looks simple, but I got to tell you, the phase where you actually draw the image seems to me to be the place where most people draw a blank. How does that part work?
Well, that can be a problem, but you don't have to rely on it, because many times the way our brain works, the way it puts things together, say, for instance, you're remote viewing a volcano. The way your mind might actually end up drawing that, you might draw two separate things. You might draw something that looks like a mountain, and then you'll draw something that's circular. So what your mind has done is it has extrapolated that volcano into two distinct pieces, the cone with the tube and the mountain itself. And a lot of people have problems when they're trying to put these things together. And it's akin to, imagine having an erector set, you know, those old things and mechanical things, and you could build little metal objects. Well, imagine trying to put together an erector set blindfolded and without the directions. Okay, that's what you're doing when you're remote viewing something. You're gathering information, and then you've got all of this stuff, and you're trying to put it together. And it is very difficult. It's a difficult thing for people to do, but it is not something that will inhibit or in any way impede your ability to be a good remote viewer, because most people don't draw things exactly the way they are when they're remote viewing a target anyways. It's the other data that counts, the perceptual data that you're writing down in stage 2 and 3 and 4 and even 6 and 5 that really matter, because they're the meat. They describe whatever it is you are remote viewing.
Well, now, we talk about remote viewing as though, you know, we're going to go off in a dark room by ourselves and do this. How accurate really is a single remote viewer by themselves?
It depends on practice, and there is some natural capability there, you know. Most people aren't going to be an Andre Segovia playing classical guitar or a famous pianist or some expert, but they can play piano. They might be able to play guitar. Well, it's the same thing with remote viewing. Your mileage is going to vary based on your natural abilities and the amount of practice you put in. Now, some
right.
people can remote view very well, and you know, it's just the way it is. But on average, somebody who's trained and who practices diligently will be able to attain anywhere between 65 and 80%. Now, if you reach that 80% level, that puts you in really the professional level, because most people, individuals, when they've been trained like me or anybody who's on my team, they're operating right around 80% accuracy.
And they have their areas of expertise, right? Like one guy might be really good at finding weapons, and another one might be very good at finding missing people.
Yes, exactly. My specialty, because of my artistic background and photography background, is I'm excellent at drawing landscapes and architecture. And also small technological devices like, you know, circuit boards and things like that. I can zero in on those things just super easy. But other people are excellent at people. They'll actually get the life forms, and they'll draw life forms, and they'll say, oh, this life form is thinking this thing at this point in time when they're doing the session.
Wow. Now, what happens when you get a team together? How accurate is a team when they're working on a single target?
Oh, you can get it up to, it at the very least, 90% accuracy. And in some cases, you can take that up through error correction protocols. You can take that up to about 100%. But more often, right around 90 to 95%.
Now, this is an interesting question. Somebody texted this in. Okay, they said that they remote viewed a UFO, and when they popped onto the bridge of this alien craft, they turned around and looked at him like, what are you doing here? Can you be detected when you're remote viewing a target that someone wants to keep secret, and they know you're doing it?
Well, that is... Yes, I will say it's a qualified yes, though. I'll also explain this. Certain aliens will be able to detect you, as will certain other non-corporeal entities. They can detect you as you're remote viewing, but on the plus side of that is you also detect them. So it's not a one-way street. But if you're remote viewing a human or other sentient being that is like us in composition, whether they be bipedal or multi, you know, walking on all fours, whatever they're doing, most of the time they won't be able to detect you. There's a very small subset of entities out there that can actually detect us when we're remote viewing them, but yes.
I got to tell you, this is going to really sound strange, but sometimes people get the feeling that they're being watched. You know, like your mom is watching you, or somebody's really concerned about you. They want to know what you're doing. And so they send their consciousness out, feeling around for you. They know you're out there somewhere. And you get the sneaking suspicion that they can see you, that they know what you're doing. They know where you are. Is that real? I mean, can people detect when they're being watched?
I haven't actually remote viewed that, so I don't know, but that's one for my list.
I remember a movie. You remember the movie Push that came out? It was that was really a cool movie. Very, very nice special effects. But they had a type of being in there. They weren't like mutants, they were just people with special abilities. But there were remote viewers in the group, and different bad guys used remote viewers to find people that they wanted to do away with. And then there was another individual who served as a blocker, and his job was to keep the area either jammed with his consciousness or somehow cloaked so that remote viewers couldn't get a clear image.
Well, I can only go by what I've read and from my own personal conversations with Ed Dames, and there is no human that can block a remote viewer.
Wow, that's cool. Hold on, we got Mark from Ohio on line one. Welcome to the program, Mark.
Hi, Dr. Agnew. I've got a few questions for your guest there, if that's all right.
You bet.
Yeah,
all righty.
Thank
you. Is there currently any intelligent life on Mars or under its surface? Have you guys ever remote viewed Mars?
Yes, we have. And there is a thing there. Yes. So, but I don't know if it qualifies as life. It has at least the semblance of life. It's underground, and it's mechanical. So I don't know if that is actually life, like an artificial intelligence or what, but there is at least one thing up there that we're aware of.
Have you seen any structures on Mars that were built by intelligent life in the past?
No. Underground, yes.
Really? Oh, underground.
Underground, yes. Yeah. Not above ground.
What?
Haven't seen anything above ground.
Interesting. What about structures on the moon built by intelligent life?
Yes, there is, but they weren't built by, that's the story in itself, but just to keep it short, it was built by us, probably along the lines of about 500,000 to a million years ago.
Amazing. That is incredible. So,
okay, we're doing another show.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't go any farther down that line. That's fascinating.
Oh, that's great stuff. I love this.
Can I ask some more? I got a ton. I don't want to take too much time.
Well, not a whole ton. We do have people holding, but go ahead, Mark. Couple more.
Okay. Have you ever remote viewed any parts of the life of Christ?
Yes, and I don't know what the religious backgrounds of most of your listeners are, but we have, and I probably don't want to talk about what we found out. Not yet, anyway.
Well, that's okay. Was his real name Emmanuel?
That we don't know. We didn't look at that.
Okay,
but we know where
question.
He is and what he's doing.
Last two questions, since we have other callers waiting. Have you remote viewed any of Billy Meyer's sightings?
Yes.
Okay.
And
did you find them to be legitimate, or
they are not? Sorry.
Really?
Yep.
Fascinating. Okay. And finally, have you ever remote viewed reincarnation? In other words, is reincarnation true?
After a fashion, it's not the way most people believe reincarnation works. But it goes back. We actually found out about that during our research and development phase of Kronos. It was kind of an ancillary bit of information that we got about that. But in a sense, yes. But it's not what people think.
Okay, great. Dr. Agnew, I think you need to pursue that information on structures on the moon built by us in the past, and I'll get off the air. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the questions, Mark.
Bye-bye.
Ramon, on line three, you're with us. Welcome to the program. Ramon, are you there? Oh, Ramon. Come on, I think that was the last line. Ramon, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, there he is. Okay, welcome to the program.
Okay. Technical difficulties. So my question is, I was calling the phone, so I'm not sure if the last caller asked this question, which I probably think I know the answer. Is there three-dimensional life like us on Venus?
Oh, wow. I can't see who I did this for because he's well-known, but we did, as a project, a search for that. So, yeah, I will say that there are two distinct types of life on Venus, which I have trouble believing that, but it's in the data. There's two life forms, and they were put there for the purpose of keeping them there. In other words, Venus is a prison for these two specific types of life forms.
Wow. So
that's amazing.
Yeah, that is amazing.
I didn't believe in myself. Right. Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, you threw me off there. I was wondering about the whole contactee movement during the 50s and how they all said they were from Venus. But would that be an answer? I don't think that's true, then.
We've done a lot of UFO work, and it's a complex issue, but what I will say, just as a sort of a short and sweet version, is that it is a psyop by an off-world agency, and they have an agenda, and it's not in the best interest of humanity to embrace their agenda.
Hmm. All right, gentlemen, I'll get off and keep listening. And also,
all right.
Well, one last thing. Actually, it is more of a complaint than a question. Is there any plans for you to teach anything in New York City? Because I find that everything is always on the West Coast.
Ah, that's a good question. I don't know about conferences. You know, I don't see a lot of conferences on the East Coast. I see a lot in Arizona. I see a lot in California and Washington State. We are actually talking about putting one together in Nashville. There has not been this kind of conference in Nashville. There have been some small gatherings, some small workshops and stuff like that. But Nashville or Charlotte even on the East Coast are both inexpensive cities to fly to. They have lots of accommodations. And I think that there is a following out here. That is to say, there are people that are interested in this kind of thing. And we might do it. You know, we don't know very many event planners out here. Most of them are in the big cities, Atlanta and New York. But that's a good question, Ramon. And I will get on it and see if I can find an answer, and I'll get back with you.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call. Yeah, so interesting box that's been opened. Do you want to stay with us for another hour?
Yeah, it wouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, that would be great because barely scratched the surface on this. We kind of got into the technical aspects of remote viewing and forgot about asking the meat and potatoes, and of course the listeners brought us back to the center line, which is where we should be in the first place. about talking about real life. Remote viewing. We think about, finding lost children or finding soldiers that have been kidnapped or weapons of mass destruction or treasures or gold or figuring out how to win the lottery. But there's a lot going on in our neck of the neighborhood. You know, we're not the only planet that's been explored. And you mentioned that there are structures on the moon and they were built by people from Earth 500,000 years ago.
Yes, that's the best guesstimate. It's kind of difficult for us to actually get a date because it keeps on going back. We stopped at a million years. They could actually be older.
Right. Well, we have had Michael Cremo on this program a couple of times, and he's the author of Forbidden Archaeology and another book called Devolution, which is the idea that the race of man was once very advanced, and we're not talking about 20,000 years ago. We're talking about 50 million years ago. And then either through cataclysm or self-destruction or disease or migration, primitive man was left here or became primitive again, and we were working our way back up the evolutionary ladder again. But that would mean that we ventured out into space before. And
since that time,
all of our satellites have decayed and fallen to Earth and gone back to dust. But some of the stuff, the junk that we left on other planets, is still there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's,
so,
it's an interesting story, is what it is.
Is the moon hollow?
That, I don't know. There are structures beneath the surface and above the surface. We know that for certain, but we don't know if it's artificial, and we don't know if it's hollow. No.
Well, it's interesting. People say, well, but the moon is such a wasteland. There's nothing there. There's no atmosphere. Actually, the moon is very rich in mineral content. It has a very large deposit of H3, which is perfect for energy. We could be mining that and take care of all of our energy needs here on our planet. But the soil is actually more than 20% by weight oxygen. A lot of people don't know that.
Yeah.
So you got oxygen, you got hydrogen. Gee, you could make water. You could make a breathable atmosphere. You could make energy. We could have been building on the moon for decades.
It's ripe for terraforming.
Yeah, it really is. So, and I have another a friend who has an uncle who has worked at NORAD all of his Air Force career. And he was at a family reunion a couple of years ago. Well, maybe it was 3 years ago now. Had a little bit too much enjoyment in his cup and let it slip to his nephew that we have been flying back and forth to the moon for 20 years.
I actually would believe that. I haven't remote viewed that, but I wouldn't doubt it.
I think there's a lot more to the space program than NASA is telling us. In fact, that NASA may even be involved in. You know, we spoke at the beginning of our program while you were still turning steaks on the Barbie in the backyard about the X-37, the orbital test vehicle. The interesting thing is hundreds of millions of dollars have been spent on this thing, but according to Wilson, who's the guy that that used to be involved in some pretty hefty government programs, he says, let's see here. Here we go. While the massive space shuttle has been likened to cargo hauling trucks, the X-37B is more like a sports car with the equivalent trunk capacity. The mission's length was not released, but the Air Force said the X-37B can stay in orbit for 270 days. The primary landing site is Vandenberg, and it's interesting. He says the significance of the X-37B is unclear because the program has been around for so long. And he's a senior defense research analyst for the RAND Corporation, who several years ago served as the executive director of a congressional panel that evaluated national security space launch requirements. This is what he says. From my perspective, it's a little puzzling as to whether this is the beginning of a program or the end of one. The X-37B is now under the direction of the Air Force's Rapid Capabilities Office. Its mission is to speed up development of combat support systems and weapon systems. Now, that just doesn't make sense to me. Why would we need a weapon system, a rapid development weapon system, in orbit? Who's going to war in orbit?
Yeah, well, it could be for, I mean, this is just me thinking military, high altitude orbital drops. You suit up in a sufficient suit and drop in cargo, troops, whatever, from orbit onto any particular place and be there in a matter of minutes. And is, you know, that's just one application I can think of off the top of my head. But that is amazing. And it could be for an orbital defense system and an orbital defense platform that we have either here or maybe on the moon.
Very interesting. I think we're going to see some dark designs in the next decade. Because, you know, uniforms are a relic. We don't go to war with armies anymore. We go to war with ghosts. We go to war with ideologies. We go to war just to go to war, to spend money, to make sure that we can still do it. You know, we're having a midlife crisis with our military, and we want to make sure we can still kill people and break stuff.
Yeah, that's what we do.
So if there are UFOs out there and they have an agenda and they don't have the best interests of humanity in mind, it would seem that they're teaming up with other groups on the planet that are perhaps trading for high-tech weaponry in exchange for what? Access to us?
Could be. What we found is mostly in the ideological sense. They want us disarmed for whatever purpose. We haven't actually figured out for what purpose, but we do know that the agenda is to disarm us. Now, it's interesting now, though, that there is, from a geopolitical standpoint, looking at what's going on with Russia and Venezuela and China and all these other countries right now, they seem to be poising for war with the United States, which is not very good if these aliens, as you're saying, the implication being that they're teaming up with somebody who's stronger than us. And that could be bad for not just the United States, but for the entire planet, because that could usher in something really terrible.
Yeah, well, I guess that was a good strategy, is to get the two big guys to fight each other. They both get weakened a little bit, you know, sort of get to their knees, and their endurance is down, and then you just step in and take over the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah, they do have an agenda of some type, and we know that it is not beneficial for us, and that they have infiltrated every aspect of our society, theology, science, politics, and they influence it.
Well, I have a chatter who's saying it's going to be a little tough to disarm the United States. You know, we're a pretty deceptive lot. We might let you think we're disarmed, and then we have something hidden in the tunnel somewhere. Michael, we're at the top of the hour. Let's take a quick break, let our sponsors do their thing. We'll be back in about 4 minutes with more Michael Ruiz, rvchronos.com. Don't go away.
Well, I dreamed I saw the knights in armor come, saying something about a queen. There were peasants singing and drummers drumming, and the archers split the tree. There was a fanfare blowing to the sun that was floating on the breeze. Looking Mother Nature on the run in the 21st century. Well, I was lying in a burned-up basement with the full moon in my eyes. I was hoping for a replacement when the sun burst through the sky. There was a band playing in my head, and I felt like getting high. I was thinking about what a friend had said. I was hoping it was a lie. Thinking about what a friend had said. I was hoping it was a lie.
Well, I dreamed I saw the silver spaceship fly in the yellow haze of the sun. There were children crying and colors flying all around the chosen one.
All in a dream, all in a dream, the loading had begun. Flying Mother Nature's silver seed to a new home in the sun. Flying Mother Nature. your silver seat to a new home in the sun.
Welcome back to Third Hour X Squared Radio. We're coming to you live from east of the Appalachians. Our AccuWindow forecast, clear skies, mid-70s, great time to go out and star watch. Don't forget the space station with Space Shuttle Discovery will be coming over Tuesday morning. So that's the 6th at 6:29 on the Eastern Seaboard. You want to see something fantastic, get up a little early, look up. It's coming out of the southwest. Should be really, really amazing to watch. You might be able to read by it. It'll be so bright. Also, please don't forget, Remembering the Future, the book is out in ebook form. If you buy it, you get 25% off the printed version, which will be out in about 90 days. The printer's a little behind. We need to get it in your hands now because there are things in there that you need to know. So we're pushing for 1,000 copies sold. Tell a friend. $7.95. You get 25% off the printed version when it comes out. And besides, you get all the pictures in color. RememberingTheFutureBook.com. RememberingTheFutureBook.com. We'll be back in 40 seconds with more of Michael Ruiz on X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In the blackness of space, one planet with liquid water, one planet that you could live on the surface without protective gear, although most Americans spend less than 15% of their time outside. Most other habitable planets in our galaxy, people live inside the planet, not on the surface of the planet. But one question people ask from time to time, are we alone in the universe? Are there aliens out there? Are there old inhabitants to the Earth that don't want to be involved with our modern society? And if so, are they visiting us? Do they have our best interests in mind? And by the way, when they're here and they're not messing with our politics and messing with our government leaders trading out secrets for access, where do they stay? That's a good question for remote viewing. Michael, welcome back to the program. Let's talk about that. Where do UFOs stay when they're here on the Earth?
From everything that we've seen, they go underground or underwater. And that's about all I can say about that right now because we're still working on various projects to locate those things.
Well, you know, we have an expedition coming up, and it depends on a lot on funding. In fact, it depends all on funding because there's only one ship that can make this trip. There's just one, and it used to be the Yamal and the Captain Kolibnikov. Now it's only the Captain Kolibnikov, and it's going to be taken out of service the fall of 2012. So we are pushing to get this expedition funded. We are speaking with the Discovery Channel, and we're speaking with a couple of investors out west. They see the value in the film. They see the value in the rarity of this expedition. But I got to admit, everyone's a little afraid because we're going to seas that no one's ever sailed before. We're going to a place on Earth no human alive, no human in generations has ever been to. We're going to film something that's never been filmed before. If I was an alien and I had a mothership the size of New York City, that's where I'd put it. What do your people say?
We haven't remote viewed that, so I really don't have an answer for you on that one, but I will add that to the list. But, well, it would be a good place. If the Earth is indeed hollow, it would be a good place to go.
Well, or if you're talking about 4,400 meter oceans, and you can park a craft under the ocean and sit on the bottom because you can create your own gravity field down there and repel the crushing forces of the ocean. That would be a nice, peaceful place to sit as well, without ships going on overhead.
Oh, yeah. Well, we know that they do go underwater very deep. We do know this with certainty. We also know that they enter into underground areas, but not necessarily what I guess people would call underground bases. They do go underground, though. Not sure how they go underground. We're still trying to figure that one out.
Wow. Wow. Well, listen, we have another caller, Scott from Florida. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Dr. Brooks. There's a book that I picked up a while ago, The Allies of Humanity, where it's by Marshall V.N. Summers. And I don't know if this is what we're talking about here, because he's talking about the same thing with there being an agenda that we don't know about, and things are not as they seem to most people, and so on and so forth. I found the book so disturbing, I put it down after about two chapters, but it involves...
You're talking about great waves of change. I made it about halfway through the book, and I couldn't do the interview. There's no way. The book was so disturbing, I just couldn't make it.
Yeah, I
have book two. I didn't get book one. But on a more brighter note, I was curious if there had been any remote viewings of Atlantis or any remote viewings of Lemuria or other civilizations in the past.
Yes, we did. we did that Atlantis as a project. It was a sort of like a fun project for us to do. And, there was a civilization called Atlantis, and it was destroyed by a great big wall of water. So I guess it would... We didn't put a date on it. We didn't do Chronos on that. But they did have an interesting... It was a very primitive, actually, society. It was very primitive, but they did have technology, because the structures that we... that all of us drew were stone structures, but they had power sources inside of these structures. We're not sure what those power sources were, but they did have technology. It was a very strange mix of primitive living and high technology. Very interesting. And it was destroyed by you can only call it a great big wave. A huge wave inundated its entire coastline, is what it appeared to be. But yes, it existed.
Okay. And Lemuria, any scoutings around in the Pacific Ocean for anything out that way?
Actually, no, we didn't look at Lemuria, although that is one of our targets. We just haven't got to it yet.
You know, we do have these rogue waves. They're very high velocity waves. They used to show up about two or three times a year. Now they're being reported by ship lanes and cruise ships about once a month. Now, fortunately, they don't find shallow water, so they just sort of push the ship up in the air and rock it a little bit and toss some dishes off onto the floor. But if one of those waves ever turns and goes toward shore and hits shallow water, we're talking about a subsonic wave 300-400 meters high.
Yeah, it's big. The actual one that hit Atlantis was actually much bigger than that. It's something that can only... I think it could only occur if an actual chunk of the continent actually submerged. That's how big this wave was.
Mm.
Yeah, it was.
And in terms of the life of Christ, Edgar Cayce channeled about Christ, and Jane Roberts and Seth came along later on and said something rather controversial, saying that Christ was not crucified but avoided the crucifixion. and that they actually got somebody else instead of Christ. Was there any evidence in terms of that having happened?
Well, the whole Jane Roberts thing is we've seen, actually we've remote viewed that since my last interview, just because that name keeps on cropping up, so I had to find out what it was all about. That entity is fake. That's number one. Number two, Christ existed. He was crucified, but he was brought back to life through some technological means, and he was put onto or somehow beamed into a triangular spacecraft.
That makes sense.
Remote viewing. That's what the remote viewing data says. So that's, you know, if you want to believe that, you can. It's it goes against my upbringing, my own Christian upbringing. But that's what the data says. And knowing that my team's accuracy is right around 90%, it's tough to accept, but that's what it is.
And is it one of the triangular ships that we see now over Belgium and other places?
It looks like it could be similar. We don't know if it's actually the same. We know that it is able to travel through time.
And do those ships have the best interest of humanity in mind?
Not as far as we can tell, no. In fact, in one of the sessions that we did do for a Bible verse pertaining particularly to the what people call the rapture, the people who were raptured were... You would expect people, if they were raptured by their God to go wherever they're going, that they would be elated, they'd be happy, jubilant, joyous. But these people who were on the ship were scared out of their minds.
Wow. Wow.
Does the char come up?
Great stuff. I like it. It's good for... good for the mind, wrap our mind around it. Actually, the concept of the rapture isn't in the Bible. Term is being taken up into the clouds. The term rapture was added much, much later and is part of a whole different movement. So, right.
You're absolutely right. The targeting strategy we used was actually... a Bible verse, I believe it was in 1st or 2nd Thessalonians, where you go up into the clouds to meet Christ.
That's right.
I forget exactly, but that's what we remote viewed.
So one of my chatters is saying, so is Christ a prisoner?
Well, we think he's an alien, which goes back to whatever the alien agenda is. From what we can tell, it doesn't appear to be... with the best interest of humanity at heart, and there is some other reason for it. They've been manipulating us. They have the capacity to travel through time. So they've been manipulating us through time. And this is, to me, it's a problem, because their actions speak to a military operation. They do it covertly. They abduct people covertly, take them against their will. They are operating as what we would call in the military a psychological operation, where they take certain people and bring them into an agenda that they then propagate throughout their enemy's territory, us being the enemy, humanity. Just like we would do if the United States is going to topple a government like we did with Saddam. We went in there much before we went in with our war machine. We sent the PSYOP people. They distributed pamphlets, found people who were sympathetic to the cause of democracy within Iraq, et cetera, et cetera. It's the same thing they're doing to us. the whole brotherhood of light, our space brothers coming to save us and all these things and disarm, you know, the big thing is to disarm the governments and the people. Well, that's exactly what a military strategist would want from the planet that he's going to invade.
Yeah, it would. You must do away with your nuclear weapons. They're bad for the planet.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Scott?
Well, I was curious also, you know, there's an entity known as Bashar who has a triangular spacecraft, and I'm curious if there's some connection there with the Esasani. That's his race. He's channeled also Bashar. Is there any knowledge of Bashar? Or
we haven't actually targeted that. It's called, how are you spelling that? B-A-S-H-A-R?
Yes, B-A-S-H-A-R.
I'll have to look into that one.
Dan Lazara?
You're great.
I did have a question. Well, actually, one of the chatters is saying, if they're capturing us or they're trying to take us as a planet, what do they do about our souls when we die? If they don't revive us through high technological means, what do they do about the rest of us that freely travel through time?
Well, if I'm understanding the question correctly, well, who is traveling through time is what I want to know, but they have an agenda that we haven't quite figured out. We do know that death, whether it be us fighting one another, is an integral part of whatever strategy that they have against us.
Interesting.
But other than that, we don't really know.
Well, is it the planet they want, or is it us?
Oh, it would appear that they want us.
Very
in some cases, but it's difficult because, like, it's very difficult because these things know when you're remote viewing them. So we have to be careful about what we actually query and try to find out because. In one of the sessions that we did, one of the targets, it actually came back. All of the remote viewers had this one phrase, you shouldn't be looking at this in RS4 data. That's our stage 4 data. It was as an analytical overlay of the signal line is what it's called, AOLS. And we all had this phrase, you shouldn't be looking, you shouldn't be asking these questions. So these things knew that we were looking at it.
And what are the ramifications of that?
Well, I'm still alive, and so are my team. We're still here.
That's interesting. Humans, pesky humans that can get through our best defenses.
Yeah.
Scott, any more questions for Michael?
I was curious if we'd looked into Lazarus and Ramtha and some of the other channeled entities.
We have looked at a couple. One of them was the Seth one, and we did one other. And I'm sorry, but I can't remember that person and their entity. But something that we do know, and this is from conversations with other remote viewers that I've had who have looked at those things, is that a majority of these entities. Are fake. They're, if you can call it fake, what they really turn out to be, in based on what these other people have told me, is the person has broken off a piece of their psyche. So it's actually a portion of their mind, but they don't necessarily have control over it. So it's actually like a fragment of their own psyche. In other instances, they are an actual entity that is a parasitic entity that sort of attaches to the person, and it gives them information, truthful information, but it's feeding off of the transfer of that psychic energy, that interaction between the two. It forms a sort of a symbiotic relationship. But that's pretty much both cases what it really turns out to be.
Okay. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for the call. Well, it sure raises a lot of questions, you know. Somebody writes in and says, I wonder, are they looking for a specific person or persons, or do they really want us, the human race? And if so, have they been here all along, scooping us up as we pass away?
That's interesting. There's, well, if we want to just go all out, they've been scooping people up for years, for centuries even, as far as we can tell. We don't know how long they've been here, but more than likely a very long time. We do know that as a civilization, we've existed much longer than archaeological and most anthropological researchers would believe. We once had a civilization that spanned at least this solar system, but quite possibly much more than that. What we do know is that at some point we encountered something out there that pretty much decimated our civilization. Whatever it is the same thing that keeps us here now. And this is something that actually Ed verified. He talked about how, you know, we can send up satellites right now, and some of them, you know, they go offline immediately for no apparent reason, and then others, you know, they'll stay up for 20, 30 years.
Right.
And the reason why is because those space platforms that go dead immediately after launch, or they blow up on the launch pad or whatnot, is typically because they have some kind of weapon system. So whatever is keeping us on this planet blows certain things out of the sky or disables them when we put them up in space. And it would appear that this planet is something of a prison for us. Anyways. And there's also these external influences from these other aliens that have their own agenda with whatever it is here that they want. So there's more than one alien group out there, and we're still trying to figure out what exactly they're doing and why they're doing it.
Yeah, I'm pretty convinced that there's more than one alien group out there as well. And I have a feeling that at least one of them, and I'm going to go back to biblical records that show that off-worlders did not have our best interest in mind. They worked with the leaders of the world because they were small in number, maybe a couple hundred or less, and they were trying to subdue an entire planet. So they just did it by trading technology and military secrets and psychological secrets and economic secrets. But, you know, as luck would have it or awareness would have it, humans are kind of independent thinkers, and they get kind of greedy, and they go back on deals, and that might be why those two individuals are stuck on Venus right now.
It could be. Could be. But, you know, I don't know if these things were cellular. It was like they were decomposed.
Uh-huh.
Well, I should say deconstructed. They were still alive. It's like they were deconstructed into molecules and distributed on the planet to keep them from forming, or to keep it from reforming, is the idea that was presented.
You know, there are a couple of pieces here that sort of fit together. I had Dr. Gary Schwartz on the program last year, and he was talking about the God experiment, and he, in this book, interviewed John Edwards, the psychic, you know, the one that communicates with the recently passed away. And the program was extremely interesting, and a question came to my mind, and I posed it to Gary. I said, why is it that John Edwards, when he's communicating with those that have passed away, only makes it back that generation? Like that person was, you know, Grandpa Bob, he only communicates with him as Grandpa Bob, and Grandpa Bob only wants to know about his pet dog and his daughter and granddaughter, and, you know, let everybody know everything's okay over here. Jim Bob, who was killed in Vietnam, is here with me, and everything's fine. I asked the question, why, if reincarnation is true, why doesn't Grandpa Bob know that he was a Roman guard, and he was a Mayan priest, and he was, you know, a farmer, you know, in Atlantis? Why doesn't he know about the previous generations? And this might fit with that, that the previous generations haven't had a chance to reincarnate because their souls, as it were, have been captured. But what about those that come here from other worlds? They have reincarnated many times, but on other worlds, and now they're here for the first time.
Interesting. Yeah, it actually does kind of make sense. What our data seem to indicate is that the human, if you want to call it a soul, I like to refer to it more as the unconscious awareness. It stretches from the beginning of this world line to the end of the world line. You can think of it almost in the particle wave duality of quantum mechanics. You've got a waveform, and then on the waveform there is a dot, and that dot is the particle. Well,
mm-hmm.
That's kind of the same thing with the human soul. You've got the soul that stretches out from beginning to end, and then our conscious awareness is a point on that waveform. And all of our incarnations are actually one incarnation.
That's right.
That life, that waveform is what really it is. And we're on that. So if John Edwards is looking or talking to Grandpa Joe, well, he's only talking to a subset of Grandpa Joe. Because
right.
the human psyche, the human soul is layered. So he's talking to like a remnant. You could call it there's a word in electromagnetics that describes it, sort of like a shadow. It's not it's a shadow of that energy.
I got
that
it.
He's talking.
Well, so what
I,
you're
I
saying is that Grandpa Joe, on the peak of this wave, at this point in the wave time, isn't mm-hmm. aware that he was Ixtacroc 2,000 years ago in the valley previously on the same wave.
Right.
All right.
It's because that piece of that he is tied to this particular moment. And when you talk to some, when you die at this moment, there is a piece of you that remains here. It's kind of like a shadow particle, shadow energy, whatever you want to call it. And it remains there because it's sort of like a placeholder. It says, okay, you've already been here.
So if we're able to expand our consciousness, either through meditation or through training, where we can encompass in our conscious mind the unconscious part of our own waveform, then we become free. We become sovereign. We're unable to be contained this way.
It's very sad, actually. I speak from experience. It's a very... it's difficult enough to just live with, you know, all the decisions that you've made in your life up to now. Maybe, you know, you wish you would have done something differently.
Mm-hmm,
but when you have to start dealing and remembering other things that happened 2,000 years ago, for instance.
Well, one of the things that gets interesting,
emotional.
You know, we look back and we see the pyramids, we see the Mayan engineering, we see the drawings in the Nazca fields, and we ask the question, gee, who built this stuff? And the answer keeps coming back, it was us. We built it
mm-hmm.
for ourselves. You're supposed to remind yourself of something.
Yep. It's ourselves reminding us of ourselves, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't find that as sad. I mean, in a sense, I'm going, oh, gee, I'm no longer concerned with the mortgage and the number of toys I have in my garage and my kids' education and, you know, all of the economic things we...
Well, what I meant by sad is I'm talking about remembering your specific life before. And maybe not just one, but multitudes of them, and knowing that, you know, you died at this particular time with all of this unfinished stuff from the previous life. And
well,
then you can compound that.
Back.
You know?
That's what keeps us coming back, because we don't want to leave stuff behind. We want to come back and awaken others. We want to help others realize that this is just a mortal experience. You never die.
Right, yeah, that's true. But it's also, it actually seems very mechanistic is what it seems like. It seems like we almost don't have a choice. We come back, it's almost like it's unnatural.
Ah, I gotcha. Yeah, I could see that when you become aware of the idea that you're being recycled, that you're being constantly sent back to die over and over again, to be born and to suffer and to be limited in your consciousness and your ability to see or interpret the universe. But I think for some, it is a choice. I think for some, they don't have to come back. They could stay ascended beings, but they come back out of choice. I mean, look at Jesus. I don't think Jesus was forced to reincarnate here. He came here to do a purpose, and he entered something magnificent into the Akashic record that makes something possible for all of us.
It's possible. I won't disagree with that, because I haven't remote viewed that. And it's funny that I keep on saying, you know, for certain things, remote viewing is so specific in its targeting mechanism that if you don't target something, you really don't have any data to talk about that or points to it, because everything else is based on conjecture or just plain old-fashioned logical deduction, reason, or belief. And that's one of the things that I like about remote viewing, is that I can, when I target something and I have the team remote view it, we get back data that really is incontrovertible. You know, unless we're just totally off target, it's incontrovertible, because it's, we have a good accuracy rate. So it's difficult to belief systems are some of the most difficult things for people when they're remote viewing things like that.
It really is. And I, you know, I keep telling people, because they tell me, do you believe in a hollow earth? I say, no, I don't. I'm a scientist. Belief is not part of the equation. Okay?
Right.
I have to accept all data that comes in. And right now, there is not enough proof to show me irrefutably that we are living on a molten ball floating around on dry land like cornflakes in a bowl of milk. It's just not there.
I agree. Yeah. I agree.
So, I'm looking for proof. And right now, the way I look at the way the continents are spread out on the planet, the way the auroras work, our magnetosphere, the fact that we've got some very strange sea chemistry going on right now, especially in the Arctic region, leads me to believe there's another biosphere on the inside of the planet.
It's possible.
That's all I'm looking for. Possibilities.
It's absolutely possible.
Well, we do have a caller. Elizabeth is on line one. Let's give it a shot. Elizabeth, welcome to the program.
Why, thank you. How are you, Brooks?
I'm doing great.
Good. I was calling in reference to a statement that was made earlier, and then part of it was brought up again about the reincarnation. and you had said that it was a little different than how most people see it. I'm wondering if it's anything more than what it is that I kind of see it.
Well, I don't read much that's out there on it, so why don't you tell me what most people say?
Huh? Oh, as far as reincarnation?
Sure.
Well, I just mean the average of that you pass away and then come back in another body and pass away and come back in another body and so forth. And when you have the memories, the way I've always seen past lives, because I kind of tend to look at everything as a whole and as fully connected. So if you're literally everything, then that means all the lives that are currently existing, have existed, will exist, are actually you. Meaning the plural you, because it's all of us. We're all part of it. So from my viewpoint, the past life memories that people have are basically the aspects and expressions that they've been through that will help them in this particular expression itself that they're in. It's kind of how I've always looked at it.
Yeah, I've heard that expressed before. I have a tendency to believe we're a little... Once we separated or we divided ourselves as source into individuals, we become sovereign beings. We actually have our own consciousness, our own will, and some of us give up that will. We decide to become angels instead and don't have a will. We don't have desire. But some of us retain the desire and we choose to be mortal and to have this experience. So
I wouldn't disagree.
When you had said that it was sad feeling for your memories, what I got out of it was the sadness was more like a nostalgia for the time frame. Like, I know when I have memories, that's the kind of sadness I get, is it's more of like a, aw, I miss being there. I mean, I'm happy where I am, but it's like, you know, when you look at old pictures and they bring you back to that memory and you just have that feeling, and they're happy memories, but you kind of have like a little sadness in there at the same time.
Well, no, mine is actual OCD. In every single life that I've had that I remember, which is a lot now, I was a warrior of some type, and I always ended up dying in battle because it was it was bloody times back then. And there was always, you know, the people you left behind. So that's what makes it sad.
I understand.
Yep, yep. I understand that one, too. Okay, well, thank you.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Thank you for the call.
You're quite welcome. I hope you all have a wonderful evening. I'm enjoying the
show.
Thank
you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. So I have another chatter writing in saying, let's see, so if Jesus is an alien, according to Michael, then Jesus was just working to contain our unconscious consciousness. I think I understand what she's trying to say. If Jesus is an alien, he came here with great teachings that were meant to free the people from not only the earth tyranny that they were in, but from the limited mindset that they were somehow separate from God, that they could not do what he did. He was trying to assure us we could do what he could do if we would just have the faith of a mustard seed. That's what I got out of it.
That's the way propaganda works. You wrap truth within a deception. So, I'm not going to argue belief systems with anybody. I'm just telling you what the data indicates. And, you know, this is what I'm saying. You know, I know a remote viewer who quit because of this data, because it went totally against their belief system.
Sure.
But, you know, it didn't go against mine, or I should say I gave up that belief system after seeing this data, because I know that what we have been taught, what we have been inculcated with, is false. It's a truth. I'm not going to deny it. there's truth in Buddhism, there's truth in the Hindu religions, there's truth in all of these religions, and they are all derivatives of whatever these beings are doing to manipulate us. It's propaganda of a type, because they wrap the truth, they wrap the spiritual truth within something that creates a specific mindset, not over just a few generations, but over thousands of years. And this mindset permeates society. So I'm not, you know, I'm not going to argue with people on their belief systems. I'm not here to change people's belief systems. I'm just giving you the data, the information that we got. What you do with it is entirely up to you.
Yeah. What I was trying to maintain before is that maybe because there are 6.9 billion of us on the planet now and growing, that it's quite possible, at least based on the resonance of consciousness that I'm seeing now out there, that some of the beings that are now having a mortal experience on this planet did not reincarnate from here. They came from somewhere else. So they have a completely different experience set. And they don't come as prisoners. They come as liberators, especially if they realize what's going on. And they can get enough of the word out to others to let them know that, you know, we are sovereign consciousnesses, and we cannot and must not be imprisoned.
Yes, that is one perspective. Another perspective is just imagine what a technologically advanced civilization could do with 3 billion people focusing their conscious minds on, or their, you know, focusing their energies on a particular religious or philosophical idea. We don't, you know, we assume that, you know, we can't do things with thoughts. But there may be a technology out there that we're unaware of that can use that energy in some form or way. And that's even more disconcerting to me.
Yeah,
because what are they using
it
this energy for?
Because we as humans, we could do it, but we haven't in the past. We can't even get together to vote. We can't even get together to take control of our own communities, our own states,
mm-hmm.
let alone a whole planet. So I'm not saying that we're doomed. I'm just saying that you know, the population of the United States couldn't send 25 cents toward the same cause.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, if I got on the radio and I said, look, you want to have electric cars, for instance, send me a dollar, okay? That's $300 million. Everybody send me a dollar, and we'll put electric cars out on the road. No taxes, no nothing. Just do it. Why? I wouldn't get 50 cents. I wouldn't get a quarter. Because they would not organize themselves in a way to do that. So I'm telling you, all it would take is 20 aliens getting together and enforcing their thoughts upon us. We're toast. Because we can't unify on anything.
That's true.
We are lazy. We are deceptive. We are untrue, unfaithful, undetermined losers. Unless we decide to be sovereign and we decide to unify our thoughts, our minds, and our consciousness on a single goal. If we can do that, and I believe we can, there's nothing we couldn't do, nothing we could not accomplish.
I agree. That could actually be what got us in trouble in the first place.
Well, you know, all I can tell you is when I drive the freeways of America, I'm amazed at how unconscious people are. They're going through life, they're going through the motions, they're filling up their 401k, they're breeding, but they're not alive.
Yeah, that's true. People just, they're robotic. And, yeah, that's kind of my mission, is to try to wake people up by showing them.
Well, You're in the right place.
Completely different perspective of things.
Well, that's what it's all about, is perspective. You know, not perception is reality, but I asked Dr. Ed Close once on this program, how many realities are there on this planet? He said, well, as many people as there are. I mean, 6.5 billion different realities on the planet. So I said, so really reality is just the mathematical average of all of the realities that are on this planet. He said, that's exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah, that actually fits in with what we know about our particular world line. Our world line is made up of those realities. We call them dimensions, but that's what it is. The structure, if we had to put it in a hierarchical sense, there's a multiverse, and then within that multiverse, there are universes, and then within each universe, there are world lines, multiple. And then within each world line, there are what we would call dimensions. And that would fit in with that sort of logical viewpoint of how things are constructed.
Mm. Well, I know there are people out there who can't wait to die. They can't wait to go back to heaven, to Jesus, for him to come take them up in the sky where they can be on a cloud in bliss forever. But I think this mortal life is pretty neat. We get to love. We get to create life in our own image. We get to savor flavors and colors and smells and textures. We get to fly. We get to swim. We get to reach the fullness of our potential if we will just realize that what we have in our hands are moments, thousands and thousands of moments, and we should not waste a single one of them.
Yeah, I agree. That's exactly what people should be doing. And by going through life in an autonomic fashion, they're pretty much not doing that.
I see a lot of fear out there, Mike. Super Bowl? I see a lot of fear. I see religions preaching fear, and you better be afraid, and you better be working out your salvation with fear. That's what I see.
Mm-hmm. It is pretty much all fear based. But by remote viewing, though, you can overcome that fear, because you can know anything. You can find out if something, you can find out the veracity of an ideology or of a religious belief, or even of what the best person to vote for is for president. For, you know, you can use it for mundane things as well, and
how about the optimum career path?
Excuse me.
How about the optimum career path? The optimum mate.
Optimum vocation. Optimum mate. Optimum residence. there's optimum health.
I love it. I love it. Total control over your destiny. In fact, you're not destined to do anything except what you want to do.
Yeah, it could be. But, you know, there's also that philosophical question that if you do a particular thing, then doesn't that make it your destiny, that you are destined to do that particular thing?
Of course. Your choices and your actions determine a certain future line. You know, if you decide to use your freedom and do drugs, you're going to lose the ability to remember things. And if you get caught, you're going to lose the ability to vote, to get a student loan, to have a meaningful life. So be careful with your choices. Make good ones.
Definitely.
Wow. I can't believe 3 hours has gone by already. Michael, I really appreciate you coming on the program. The website is rvchronos.com. You can find it at X Squared Radio. Michael, are you going to be speaking anywhere, training anywhere? What should our listeners know?
Well, coming up, we don't have any speaking engagements or any workshops planned, because we've been busy putting together our next release, which is a geolocation DVD course. So it's called GeoLock, and you can see that. There's actually nothing at the site right now, but it will be RVGeoLock, RVGeoLOC.com. And then we also have the Enigma series, which is I'm going to have my team remote view certain enigmatic targets like the construction purpose of the pyramids and, you know, Atlantis and things like that. We're going to be doing some remote viewing with that and putting it together in a documentary format. It's kind of like a reality TV show, but that will be available on DVD also, and it'll be a series of DVDs. And those are what we've got planned right now. After the first one of those goes into production, we'll probably at some point in the next few months start announcing workshops and things like that.
Great. Well, when you get any of that done or close to done, give me a call and we'll have you back on, because that stuff is so fascinating, and that's core stuff for X Squared Radio. We like it.
Awesome. I will. Thank you for having me.
Oh, my pleasure, my pleasure. All right, Earth Explorers, we'll be back next week. Hopefully we have a guest still working on it. But hang in there, and remember, it's spring, so take control and do something grand. We'll see you next week. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.